It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Casey Cagle coming in first in a five-way race in the GOP primary for the Georgia governorship. However, Cagle was not able to pass the 50% threshold that he would have needed to avoid a runoff in July. I spoke with him about that just moments ago. Listen.
We felt all along that we would be in a runoff. This was a very contested primary with a lot of players in the race. And so it's very, very difficult, and it's never been done to my knowledge to get to 50+1. But within that context, our strategy really is to continue to carry our message across Georgia.
On July 24, Cagle will face a runoff against Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp, who placed second. As statewide office holders, both Cagle and Kemp enjoyed the strongest name recognition among the five GOP contenders. Now, with only two candidates in the Democratic primary, that contest was settled tonight, and it was settled decisively. Former State Representative Stacey Abrams winning by a landslide over State Representative Stacey Evans. Both Stacey's had similar platforms, but different campaign strategies. Stacey Evans tried to bring suburbanites and working class voters back into the Democratic fold, but it was Stacey Abrams' door-to-door efforts to recruit new voters, liberal-leaning young people and minorities that seem to have paid off. And other Democratic candidates will likely take note of this as they head into the midterms and 2020 presidential election. Now, if she were to win the general election in November, Abrams would become the first female governor of Georgia and the first African-American female governor of any U.S. state. Now, Democrats do face an uphill battle in statewide elections in Georgia. After all, Georgia remains a strongly red state. But with GOP runoff coming up in July, two Republican candidates also have their work cut out for them over the next 9 weeks.
Well, Sandy Rios with you. That was Jonathan Siri on Fox last night. Could I just say, before I start into the details here, that last night was a very good night for conservatives. Really good night for conservative candidates, including in Texas and Georgia. And so let me just kind of flesh this out with you. The Georgia race actually is kind of an interesting template, I think, because the two governor candidates, Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle and Secretary of State Brian Kemp, are the top vote-getters. Casey Cagle was the gentleman who removed the tax subsidies from Delta Airlines when they very publicly removed their support for the NRA and actually caused a lot of financial harm to the NRA when they did that. So I was going to read you his statement on that. I will, if I can find it, a little bit later. But Brian Kemp was the one who was running that deportation bus. You probably saw that on television. He was very, very outspoken about deporting illegal immigrants. And he also ran a commercial. And by the way, that ad was taken down by Facebook, or either YouTube or Facebook, if temporarily, because, of course, you know, hate speech. You can't say anything like that. You can't even make a joke about it. But it was restored. And that'll, listen, I'm going to bring up something a little bit later that will make that more apropos and actually kind of a portent of some really bad things coming on social media in regard to conservative candidates. But nevertheless, that was Secretary of State Brian Kemp. And so strong Second Amendment also. Both of these guys, as far as I can tell, are really solid candidates. And those are the choices that Georgians have in the fall election. Well, there'll be a runoff between them. And then one of those candidates will face one of the two Stacey's that was mentioned in Jonathan Siri's report, Stacey Abrams and Stacey Evans. Now, the big distinction between them, and this is really interesting because this is a microcosm of what Democrats are wrestling with in the midterms. There is a split in the Democratic Party about whether they should run candidates who are sort of middle of the road, veterans that sound like conservatives, sound like they're Second Amendment, First Amendment supporters, to try to appeal to swing voters and to some Republicans. Should they do that? That's kind of what this Stacey Evans hoped to do, was kind of be a little bit more moderate and reach out to the middle ground. Stacey Abrams, on the other hand, is a leftist, supported by Bernie Sanders, supported by Hillary Clinton, and a lot of other people whose names I can't remember, but they're on the left. And so she was running a very outright leftist campaign, and that's what the split is in the Democratic Party. Should we run these radically left candidates, or should we run these more moderate, like sleight-of-hand candidates? It's kind of the same thing that goes on in the Republican. It is the same thing that goes on in the Republican primaries, where these establishment candidates pretend as though they are very conservative, and then they get to Washington and they vote just the opposite. That's what our leadership does in the Republican Party. And so that's what happened in Georgia last night. So likely because of Georgia's makeup and mood at this point, I think the Republican is likely to win. And it will either be Lieutenant Governor Casey Cagle or Secretary of State Brian Kemp, both of whom seem to be really fine candidates. So that was a good win in Georgia last night. Now, in Arkansas, we talked about on the air yesterday. Many of you called in to alert me to the election between Asa Hutchinson, the sitting governor, who I knew a long time ago when he was on the House committee that did the impeachment of Bill Clinton. He was very good then. Honestly, he was very good then. But my Arkansas friends are telling me he's not so good now. He's moderated. He's become much more of the establishment candidate. So he was challenged by Jan Morgan. Let me read to you how her candidacy was described by a reporter named Andrew Proko. This is what he says. Morgan is challenging him from the right on a platform of basically bigotry and white right-wing nuttery. She owns a gun range and gained notoriety in 2014 after declaring it would be a Muslim-free zone. She's basically attacking Hutchinson from the right on any issue. That's what Dylan Scott says, the reporter. Well, many of you called in yesterday to tell me that she was an excellent candidate and you were supporting her. But unfortunately, she went down yesterday and Asa Hutchinson won substantially. So that's what happened in Arkansas. President Trump was supporting Asa Hutchinson. But based on the record that he has demonstrated, that is disappointing. So that's what happened there. Now, let's go back to these other races that we had talked about so much. And let me give you the overview before I get into the weeds here. Chip Roy, who was running in Texas 21, that's Lamar Smith's former seat. Lamar Smith was a very good congressman, good on all the issues, but not a firebrand, not a part of the Freedom Caucus. And so Chip Roy, who was the chief of staff for Ted Cruz, is going to be a firebrand. He is just going to be, although he understands the inner workings of Washington, that's a good thing in some cases, because it takes a long time to get adjusted there. They only serve 2 years. And so sometimes I think by the time they've served, 2 years, they're just getting to know the system. But Chip already knows the system, and he's going to be running then. He beat McCall, who was the other candidate. Some are saying backed by the establishment. Others are saying he was a Tea Party candidate. But I think most strong conservatives around Texas thought Chip Roy was the guy. And he beat Lamar Smith 52-47, something. I'm rounding it off, but that's basically it. Buddy Pounds is a strong conservative in Texas 5. She won to Pete Sessions. She was Louie Gohmert's pick, but she lost to Lance Gooden, who was Pete Sessions' pick. And many are disappointed about that because they feel Lance is too liberal, a Republican. But that was one of the only losses last night for conservative candidates. Ron Wright in Texas pulled it out, Texas 6. Michael Cloud, allegedly, I don't know, I'm telling you what conservatives down there are telling me, has a stellar record. People are excited about him winning. He beat a lobbyist whose name is Beck Brun. And then Dan Crenshaw. We talked about this yesterday when you called in. Excuse me. Dan Crenshaw, I'll borrow words from someone I know, killed it in Texas, too, against Kevin Roberts. So Nan is that special ops guy who had lost one eye in combat. He seems to be an amazing candidate. And so we'll see what happens with that. I think that's everything I want. That's kind of the basic of it. Let me just say that the Freedom Caucus, based on last night, will be picking up membership. There's no question about it. Crenshaw, the guy who's lost an eye, who was with Special Forces and lost his eye in combat, was backed by members of the Texas Freedom Caucus, which, according to what I'm reading, is more hardcore than the National Freedom Caucus. You know, it is true that not every member of the Freedom Caucus in Washington is as conservative as Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and Louis Gohmert. There are varying degrees, and so that doesn't really surprise me. But interestingly enough, Crenshaw will be, if he wins in November, will be replacing outgoing Congressman Ted Poe, Republican of Texas, who left the Freedom Caucus during the health care debate. And so the establishment was pretty happy about that. And it's interesting now, Crenshaw is expected to replace him, and he's going to be right there back in the Freedom Caucus and really a very strong spokesperson for conservative causes. You know, that's all I'm going to say on that. Really, this is all good news. And there was another election in Idaho a couple of days ago that I don't think that was last week. Russ Fulcher ran against an establishment candidate and won in Idaho. And Russ is likely to go to the Freedom Caucus as well. And so this is good. Last night was a good night for conservatives, no question about it. Well, last night, President Trump spoke at Susan B. Anthony. Susan B. Anthony is a pro-life 501c3, and they also raise money and support candidates. And President Trump spoke at their annual banquet last night. I wanted you to hear a little bit about what he said, clip 8.
Now, for the first time since Roe v. Wade, America has a pro-life president, a pro-life vice president, a pro-life House of Representatives, and 25 pro-life Republican state capitals. That is pretty good. That is pretty good. Wow. That is pretty good. When I ran for office, I pledged to stand for life. And as president, that's exactly what I've done. And I have kept my promise, and I think everybody here understands that fully. One of my very first acts as president was to reinstate the Mexico City policy to prevent taxpayer dollars from funding abortion centers overseas. It's a little reminiscent of Ronald Reagan. A few months later, with Marjorie in the Oval Office, she was sitting there with us, and she stood then and signed legislation to overturn the rule that four states to fund abortion providers with taxpayer dollars. Marjorie was there with me. We've appointed a record number of judges who will defend our Constitution and interpret the law as written.
Yeah, and you know what? There's actually a very long list of the things that President Trump has done in the issue of life, and it's pretty amazing. And the most recent, of course, was to change Title X funding just last week, which would force Planned Parenthood, who has these massive clinics around the country that perform the most abortions of any clinic, any entity in the United States, that if they're going to continue funding abortions, if they're going to continue taking federal tax dollars, they're going to have to separate the facilities for their so-called women's health attention. So, in other words, they're going to have to build a separate building and have separate staffs and keep their records as separate if they cannot do women's health in these abortion clinics. And you know what? That's a huge hit. And that's what the president did just last week. Also, the president made sure that abortion coverage wasn't included in the Obama exchange plans, which was something that he had to reverse. Also, he's supporting the Paying Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which would stop late-term abortions after 20 weeks. And that's not really even all, but that gives you an idea of what he's done. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared. And the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works. And it's so easy to get your questions answered too. So why not? You can call right now. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
Come join Sandy Rios for a walk back in time when she was a young grieving mom, discovering firsthand how God's strength is made perfect in weakness. The music of Sasha's Song, Sandy Rios' first album project, is a reminder of God's faithfulness.
Would God sustain us through the years?
Produced by John Ennis of the Billy Graham Crusade with members of the Indianapolis Orchestra, this beautiful music will lift your heart.
Like peering through a window blurred with rain, emotions run together in a flood of doubt and pain. For He is able.
Available on CD at afastore.net.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
It's on our dollar bills, and it's on a lot of government buildings, but should In God We Trust be in public schools? There's a raging debate over that issue in Minnesota. Republican State Senator Dan Hall introduced a bill that would allow the national motto to be displayed in public schools.
God and country is no longer lifted up in a place of honor like it once was. And in part, it seems to be eliminated from our schools. There are those that are even afraid to bring up God and country in our schools.
But atheists and some Democrats are not so keen on trusting in God. State Senator John Marty says he finds the phrase to be offensive. Senator Scott Dibble wondered how Republicans would feel if the posters referenced Allah. Well, that's real easy. This nation, the United States of America, does not put its trust in Allah. We put our trust in God. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Senator, you're exactly right. You put your finger on what I would call sort of our highest counterterrorism priority at the moment. We have about 1,000 investigations into exactly the kind of people you're describing, covering all 50 states as I'm sitting here right now. And that's not even counting, you know, the Al-Qaeda investigations, the traditional ISIS investigations, the domestic terrorism investigations, but just the group you're talking about. And what makes it so hard is that there are not many dots to connect with some of these people. They pick soft targets. They use easy-to-use weapons, you know, IEDs, cars, knives, guns. And they can make decisions on the spur of the moment. We're trying to get better at looking for red flags as to when people who are getting radicalized sort of make that switch into potentially mobilizing. A lot of that is outreach to the community, partnership with our state and local law enforcement who know those communities better. But it's hard. It's something I compare notes with my foreign counterparts on a lot, and they have the same challenge. All of our closest allies have the same issue.
That was your new FBI director, Christopher Wray, who's kind of a stranger to us, isn't he? The president appointed him, and since all of this dust-up on the FBI has been taking place and this disgraceful actions, I think, by James Comey and Robert Mueller, there's a lot of talk about the FBI, not much about the director. What's he doing in the midst of all this? Is he cooperating? We have talked a great deal in the past about the changes that Robert Mueller made to the FBI, how he oversaw the scrubbing of all the manuals on Islamic terrorism, on jihad. And then we also talked about how he changed the hiring practices so that people fled the bureau, left, because they were forced into retirement by a policy that required agents to all move to D.C. At some point in their career. And so, consequently, a group of junior agents who were more obliged and loyal to Director Mueller populated the FBI. That's kind of a thumbnail sketch of what's happened. But so now here we are. This is 2018. We're in the midst of this upheaval over alleged Russian interference. But the terrorist threat in this country really remains. You heard it from Christopher Wray's words just then in his testimony before Congress just a few days ago. I've asked John Guandola to join us this morning. John is the president and founder of Understanding the Threat. But let me just give you some background on John. You've heard him before with me, but just in case, John is a former Marine. He also was with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and in that capacity, he created and implemented the FBI's first counterterrorism training education program. And this was after 9/11. John made himself expert about this. And then everything changed under Bob Mueller. And so John, through his entity, Understanding the Threat, has been going around the country since then as a patriot, training people about what this threat really is, a lot of them law enforcement and FBI agents. Okay, that's a long introduction. All that to say, John, thank you for joining me this morning.
Well, thank you very much, Sandy, for having me again. I really appreciate it.
Hey, I want to know, did you know anything about Christopher Wray before he was nominated by President Trump?
No, I did not.
And as you have watched him, perform his duties in the last year plus, would you be willing to share your observations? What do you think?
I think I'll start with the positives. I think at least what he is doing is demonstrating that he's got the back of the individual agent. And in that sense, I think that's a positive step. But his actions and his words reveal that he has no more of a clue about the Islamic threat than his predecessors, Mr. Comey and Mr. Mueller. You just played a clip where he literally said, there are no dots to connect. And that, to me, is an astounding comment when nearly all of the attacks, both individual jihadi attacks and operational attacks from at a grander scale in the United States, 9/11 to today, including 9/11, you can directly connect to the Muslim Brotherhood network and Muslim Brotherhood organizations that supported those attacks. And so that's the first part of what just to me is staggeringly incompetent behavior and total lack of investigative prowess by not being able to tie these attacks directly to the Islamic centers and Islamic societies, which you can do directly. And we can go through those if you want. The other piece is the utter lack when he talks about radicalization. And we don't understand, these guys can just quickly radicalize. And you can only come to that conclusion if you believe the lie that the war in which we're engaged at a national and international level has nothing to do with Islam. And yet 100% of our enemy says it exactly has to do with Islam. They quote Islamic doctrine in furtherance of what they're doing. And from our research, we've never found that ISIS or al-Qaeda has misquoted Islamic doctrine in furtherance of what they've done. And so that's where we are. We're in no better place than we were 10 years ago.
John, I don't need to explain this to you, but I need to explain it to my audience. I've mentioned this many times, but I'll mention again that the Holy Land Foundation trial, I think it was 2003, exposed to us the roots of the attempt to perpetrate civilization jihad on this country by infiltrating. It was about the Muslim Brotherhood and all their connections. It lined out all their partners, the Muslim Students Association, Muslim Brotherhood CARE, and many ISNA, on and on we could go. So it's right there. At least, that's an old document now, but we have that. And I remember, John, maybe you know this specifically, but this brings up to me an interaction I think I saw with FBI Director Mueller and some congressperson where he really didn't even know the elements of the Holy Land Foundation trial. And, of course, under Mueller's leadership, there never was an indictment of these unindicted co-conspirators. There was supposed to be a follow-up after that trial, wasn't there? And they were supposed to go after these other co-conspirators.
Yeah, that's correct. So the case was adjudicated in November 2008. It was initiated after they were indicted after 9/11. The Holy Land Foundation was. And at the time it was indicted, the Holy Land Foundation was the largest Islamic charity in America, and it was a Hamas organization. So it was a terrorist front organization, and it was the largest Islamic charity, which is an interesting data point. In November 2008, they were convicted, along with the leaders of Holy Land Foundation, for directly funding Hamas, a foreign terrorist organization. And then what we get is these hundreds of unindicted co-conspirators, and the FBI and the Department of Justice begin working to indict Omar Akhmad, who's the chairman emeritus of the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, and Eric Holder, the attorney general at the time, shut that investigation down. And since that time, in early 2009, we have had no further prosecution of any of the hundreds of unindicted co-conspirators.
All right, so we've had a decade now of ignorance that has descended upon the FBI, real ignorance. And would you say, John, what is the average agent? I know you can't go into all the details, but what does the average FBI agent coming out of Quantico know about Islam and the doctrine and the threat to us?
Nothing. And it's not only that they don't know about Islam, they're actually being taught exactly the opposite. That in fact, Islam is a religion of peace, and that most of the quote-unquote violent extremists are, you know, that there's as much white supremacist violence as there is Islamic violence, and that that Islam and violence have no relation. So it's not only that they're ignorant, it's that they're actually the opposite of the truth.
Now, John, what you're doing is going around the country training. I don't know if it's just if everyone's welcome or it's law enforcement. What is the answer to that? Can anyone come to your trainings?
Yes. So when we have different training programs. We do training programs for civic leaders, elected leaders, church programs that are anywhere from two hours to 2 days. And we have a three-day law enforcement program for police, military, National Guard, intelligence professionals. And we're the only ones in the country doing this because we're actually laying out the network in the United States and giving citizens and police the ability to map out the network in their local community. And then, of course, we give police investigative tools to actually go after the jihadi networks in their communities legally, depending on the state they're in. And we're the only ones working with state officials to create strategies to dismantle these networks. So those programs, depending on which one, obviously the programs for police or military intelligence professionals are meant for those groups, but we do programs for all parts of the society.
So when you have law enforcement, military, National Guard, do you have any FBI agents that come? I mean, do you have anyone's ear from the FBI?
Well, it's interesting you ask that. We just recently, the answer is yes. We get people who are FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force agents and officers. We also get other federal agencies. Like I just did one in Texas. We had federal agents from DHS. But I'll stick with your question about the FBI, because what's interesting is I've never had anybody from the FBI who at the end of the three-day program knew what we were talking about. And so I'll give you an example. Just 2 months ago, not even quite 2 months ago, less than 2 months ago, we did a program at a fusion center, which is a state-level intelligence center that most states have fusion set. Well, they all have fusion centers, but some have more than one. And we were at a major fusion center, and the directors, the two directors of the fusion center, the FBI supervisor were there, and agents and officers from about 15 or 16 different agencies were in the room. And we just gave a four-hour block to them as an introduction, and it blew their minds. And nobody in the room were aware of either the details of the network, but more importantly, of the doctrine, the Islamic doctrine that drives why these individuals and groups do what they do. So that's the problem. Our universal response to our three-day program is at the end of the program, we ask, how many of you knew this before you came in here? And unanimously, the response is, we've never heard this information, and yet they all say it's critical to protecting their communities.
John, we're going to run out of time, which I'm really going to regret, but let me ask you a couple of quick questions. If there were to be a change in the training at the FBI and other law enforcement, Pentagon, everything, who could initiate that? Who has the power to make those changes?
Well, any of the cabinet-level officials who are, you know, in charge, like the Secretary of Homeland Security, the FBI Director, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs could initiate it, but really it's the in the Department of Defense, it's the combatant commanders for each of the different commands could initiate that, and it could be initiated from a training officer in a particular command. It could be, you know, somebody at FBI headquarters that runs you know, the training program, or somebody at Quantico, they could say, hey, we need this training, and they could push it. But the FBI doesn't, you know, when I talk to most people, besides the agents I know that I trained when I was in, most of them think they know it. They think they understand the problem. I'll just leave your audience with this. You know, we did a training over a year ago. We had a police chief in the training. There were about 75 people. And on day two, he looked over the aisle at two of the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force guys, and he said, you know, why in the heck have you guys not told us any of this? And they literally said in front of the whole class, we've never heard any of this. And so they don't know what they don't know, and that's the problem. And that was my experience when I was in, which is why I created the training program. And it's actually worse today, because the people that were left when I left, that I had trained, that were actually teaching police and others, all that was shut down under Director Mueller.
Well, let me just say, John, that let me repeat that your training is under the banner of understandingthethreat.com, understanding the threat. So any of you listening who are law enforcement, or you have friends of law enforcement, you want to follow up on this and get some good training or arrange for that in your community, that's the place to go. John, 30 seconds. Has there been any geographical area in the United States where you've seen your training actually save lives?
Yes. I mean, we have prosecutors, sheriffs, and police chiefs in Arizona and Texas as two good examples where they have literally, directly as a result of our training, initiated cases where they have actually gone after and identified bad guys. And in one case in Louisiana, they actually identified and discovered a wanted Al-Qaeda guy that the FBI had lost track of.
Wow,
that's a direct result of our training.
That's amazing. Understanding the threat. Understanding the threat. John Guandolo, thank you, thank you, thank you. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Like snow in summer or rain in harvest, so honor is not fitting for a fool. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Within weeks of announcing its decision to pull certain rifles from its stores and impose a 21-year-old age requirement for all gun purchasers, Dick's Sporting Goods saw its stock price plummet, alongside a reduction of same-store sales. Dick's has now hired lobbyists to advance its anti-gun agenda on Capitol Hill, and three key gun manufacturers have cut ties with the store. O.F. Mossberg & Sons, Springfield Armory, and High Point Firearms Manufacturers, MKS Supply, will not abide Dick's assault on the Second Amendment.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Women and men alike find themselves in despair after an abortion. Every woman who had an abortion was for a short time a mother, every man a father. But afterwards, they're all people in pain, anger, sadness, relationship problems. These often accompany an abortion. But there is hope. Call 866-482-LIFE. Your call is confidential, and you'll be talking with someone who has already been where you are and found the way out. 866-482-LIFE.
Join American Family Radio for a live broadcast from our nation's capital at the Museum of the Bible. The museum was created to help people understand how the Bible has changed our world and impacted lives. I'm Bert Harper. Join me and the Exploring the Word team from Washington, D.C. We hope you'll be inspired to engage even more with this wonderful book. Join us this afternoon at 3 Central. Thanks to the Museum of the Bible and India Partners for their support of American Family Radio.
Hi, I'm Jan Harper. If you're a pastor's wife like me, you probably know what it feels like to live in a fishbowl. You know, that feeling like everybody is watching your every move?
The annual AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat is 3 days and two nights of relaxation and building relationships. The retreat is hosted by Pastor Bert Harper of Exploring the Word and his wife, Jan. Special guest speakers will include AFR morning personality J.J. Jasper and his wife, Melanie. The AFA Fishbowl Retreat is set for October 9 through 11 at the Linden Valley Conference Center in Linden, Tennessee. Call 800-326-4543, extension 300, for registration and information. That's 800-326-4543, extension 300. Or visit repairingthefoundations.net. Registration is limited to the first 35 couples.
Get out of the fishbowl and into the AFA Pastor and Wife Fishbowl Retreat. We'll see you there.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Visiting South Korean President Moon Jae-in must have been disappointed that the headline from his meeting yesterday with President Trump is that the latter's planned summit with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un might not occur. Ironically, that signal may actually have improved the prospects for such a summit, as with Mr. Trump's earlier statement to the effect that he'd skip such a get-together if it wouldn't advance North Korea's denuclearization and wouldn't stay if it didn't. The president is denying the North and South Korean leaders alike the sense that they have leverage over an American leader desperate for negotiations and a deal. Trump's clear readiness to deny Kim Jong-un the legitimacy, let alone the benefits of such a summit with him, will maximize the chances of a useful negotiation and, hopefully, spare us the ignominy and risks of a counterproductive one. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
In a room beneath the Capitol this morning, the intel chiefs who came to deliver a classified briefing about election interference that every House member was invited to shared those secrets with a lot of empty seats.
I would say we had a good 40 or so members that attended.
That's 40 or so out of 428 members serving right now. One theory? Congress didn't want to commute an hour early.
Well, it wasn't 8 o'clock.
So still, Homeland Security Committee Chairman Mike McCaul was surprised that so many lawmakers who talk about election interference on the stump blew off the Director of National Intelligence, FBI Director, and DHS Secretary.
The Democrats have made this such a big issue and have asked for this briefing for a long time, and we finally schedule it, and it's classified, and, you know, 30 members show up.
Every member of Congress that isn't retiring is up for re-election in the midterms, but none are known to be in the crosshairs of foreign meddlers.
Right now we have no intel that there's a particular race of interest.
Secretary Nielsen also explained that in addition to Russia, China and Iran are considered threats to election integrity, but that the kind of interference the intel community is worried about in 2018 is the same kind detected in 2016, where ballots aren't changed, but social media is manipulated to cause chaos.
I think we remain concerned, certainly on the foreign influence side. I mean, we've seen that continually.
Details like that did not dazzle the Democrats who did attend.
I didn't hear one bit of classified information. I mean, there was nothing that I couldn't have read in USA Today that that was revealed. So the fact that there was a low attendance, it doesn't matter.
This was the rare Russia-related event on Capitol Hill that happened behind closed doors. So it's going to be very interesting to see if the hundreds of lawmakers who decided they didn't want the classified update today decide to show up to the next Russia hearing where the cameras are rolling the whole time.
Yeah, well, it might sound like he's cynical, Peter Ducey, but he's right. I mean, he's really right. That's how it works. No cameras rolling, and even though they boast and they bark and they beat their chests about this Russian collusion and how Russia's messing with social media to Russia made you vote for Donald Trump, right? They just made you buy the things you saw on Facebook and Twitter and whatever else you saw. It was because of the Russians that you voted for Donald Trump, right? It's because of the Russians that you keep voting for him. But that's the premise. And so they're supposed to have this classified briefing on it, and they don't show up. What? One of those persons said 40 people, one said 30 out of 400 and something members of Congress. And so this is how it goes. I mean, we're being represented by some really feckless, irresponsible, selfish, self-aggrandizing, enriching themselves congressmen and senators. And then in the issue of social media, I have not mentioned this to you because it's just complicated, but Facebook, surely you must know that Facebook is changing its rules. I'm actually seeing a big difference on my own Facebook page, which it hardly reaches. We used to reach thousands of people. It's not reaching that. And I see like the responses are suddenly smaller. And that's happened as of January with other conservative outlets. And as of just a few days ago now, Facebook is doing something else, which won't affect most of you listening to me directly, but it will affect you indirectly. And that is, they are, this is so complex, but they are designating ads that are running on Facebook as political ads. And they are making it so difficult for ads that are advocating for issues, whether it's pro-life or whether it's marriage or whether it's guns or whatever, they're making it very, very difficult to keep those ads up on Facebook. And so they're shutting down existing ads. They're making people go through the mail. They're asking them to send information about who's posting them, their last four digits of their social security number, their driver's license. And it's taking 3 weeks to get that information back. Do you see what's happening? And so conservative candidates are, even if they don't know it, they're immediately, they will not be able to get their information through. Like the primaries are coming up in various other states. Next week there are some. And the next Tuesday, you know, just a lot of primaries through June. So conservative candidates are going to have a really hard time getting up any kind of campaign ads on the Facebook, unless they're all over this already. And chances are they aren't. So thank you, Mark Zuckerberg. It's great. You know, and you're stopping the Russians, right? You're stopping the Russians, right? Or maybe not so much. Maybe you're just stopping and shutting down conservative voices because the left really does believe that the right won this last presidential election because they used social media. And they ignored CBS, ABC, and CNN and other outlets and said, no, we're here. We're getting this information on Facebook. That's where a lot of people get their news. We're getting this great information, and based on what we're reading, we're voting for someone else. We're not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. And so they thought their plan was laid well, and they were very upset. So trust me, they're taking back social media. And unless someone at the highest levels of government takes the bull by the horns, you will not take it to the bank, even starting in this primary season. You will not be hearing or getting or receiving information through Facebook as you once depended on it. It's going to be, the whole world is changing here. So just please remember, if you're doing Facebook, I think, you know, send your pictures of your grandchildren and your kids and your vacation, fine. But if you're going to depend on that for your news and information, you're not going to know much. You're going to know very limited amounts. And in fact, Facebook now is making sure you see other articles instead. So just please be aware of that and pass it on to your friends. Facebook is not going to be a safe place to get good information. Some of it may manage to get through, but you're going to miss a ton. And so what does that mean? That means you're going to have to, well, you're going to have to listen to American Family Radio for one thing to get good information, but also you have to pick news outlets that you trust and go to them on a regular basis to get your news. I mean, you can sign up for alerts from those news organizations so that it'll come in your inbox. I think that's what you're going to have to do. So let me just update you on the Jim Jordan for Speaker effort, which I'm involved in that proudly. So is Tim Wildman. We think he's the best man for that job. On Sean Hannity last night, Representative Matt Gaetz openly endorsed him as well, which is a very big deal. Matt is from Florida. And in the course of the conversation, Jim Jordan was on last night with Sean Hannity talking about the Russian collusion scandal. And in the midst of the comments that Jim made, Matt Gaetz said, that's why Jim Jordan should be Speaker of the House. Then we would have some real oversight. And then Sean Hannity responded by saying, by the way, for the record, I'm supporting Jim Jordan. I just endorsed him. So that's the latest on that. Al Green, who's a Democrat, was on C-SPAN, and he said, there's a good likelihood there will be articles of impeachment. Here is a point that I think is salient and one that ought to be referenced. Every member of the House is accorded the opportunity to bring up impeachment. This is not something the Constitution has bestowed upon leadership. It's something every member has the right and privilege of doing. Because he was asked about what would happen if the Democrats take over the House, and he responded, yes, they'll go right to impeachment. So that was his opinion. He also said in that interview that he knew of at least one Republican member of Congress who had told him privately he was strongly considering impeaching President Trump himself. So that's an update on that. Then here's an interesting thing. This is from another outlet. Reuters, actually. Reuters tracking poll, which is, Reuters is extremely liberal, so it's not a poll that conservatives necessarily look to for what they trust. But Reuters itself is showing for the week ending May 20th that 40.7% of respondents would vote for the Republican candidate in their district, while 34.5% would vote for the Democratic candidate. 15% said they're undecided, 6.5% plan to vote for a third-party candidate. So that's really interesting. Also, CNN polls shows something very similar. So it looks like the GOP, while, you know, what, in January they took polls and the Republicans, were way, way far behind in these polls, and they were predicting a blue wave, and we were all talking about that. That doesn't mean it won't happen, by the way. But at this point in time, coming in the wake of some of these headlines, you know, like the Democrats, none of them going to the opening of the embassy in Jerusalem. That's pretty offensive to Jewish Americans, I would think. So that was one big example. And of course, the leftist press was cheering on the Hamas-led protests. And then, of course, a big story was the president referring to members of the MS-13 gang as animals. You know, actually, let's listen to that report from Brian Yenis. It's not Brian, but it's a report from Fox, because this is pretty ironic. Let's listen, clip 6.
Documented MS-13 gang.
Over the last year, ICE raids targeting MS-13 gang members have increased. In 2017, ICE arrested 796 MS-13 gang members nationwide, the highest total seen in 9 years. It's all part of President Trump's initiative to defeat the Mara Salvatrucha, a brutally violent international gang from El Salvador. The FBI estimates MS-13 has 10,000 gang members in the U.S. Hotspots include Los Angeles to Virginia and Long Island, New York, where approximately 2,000 members live. On Wednesday, President Trump will host an MS-13 roundtable on Long Island to discuss progress made and what more needs to be done.
When the MS-13 comes in, when the other gang members come into our country, I refer to them as animals. And guess what? I always will.
But it's Trump's insistence on referring to MS-13 gang members as animals that has outraged critics who believe he was calling all immigrants animals. Republican Pete King of Long Island defends Trump.
First of all, the president is entirely on target. The only criticism I would make is that he's being unfair to animals. Animals don't kill their own, don't torture their own.
On Monday, the White House doubled down, releasing an MS-13 memo that included the word animals 10 times for effect. Suffolk County Sheriff Errol Tulin Jr. doesn't agree with the president's rhetoric, but he says the president's support is making a difference and they need more of it.
If I can get funding for my great program, my gang resistance education and training, so that we can continue to go into the middle schools where we're thwarting gang recruitment.
Fighting MS-13 poses big risks. Police are on high alert after the gang called on its members to kill an officer because police are making too many arrests.
All right, that was Brian Yenis from Fox. And ironically, of course, the president referred to MS-13 as animals. You heard their response. I'm really glad when they doubled down. You know, I don't think the left knows what to do when you say no. Yes, I believe that. They really don't know how to respond because they're used to people equivocating. And so I love it when the president says, no, I meant it. I meant what I said. And ironically, an MS-13 member, Joel Martinez, who murdered a 15-year-old as part of his initiation as a homeboy in one of the gangs, parts of MS-13, was nicknamed Animal. He just received a 40-year prison sentence because of the way he treated people. He said, I stabbed the Culero 3 times. He stared at me and he asked me if I was going to stab him. And I told him, yes, the Mara rules you. So Culero is a derogatory MS-13 member's use for the rival gang. Killing a rival gang member was a requirement for achieving full status in MS-13 in Massachusetts. And so his nickname was Animal. And of course, the president is now in trouble, was in trouble for calling members of MS-13 animals. But you see how this goes. And that reminds me of another story, which I don't have time to play, but you need to know about it. California now is in the process of trying to pass a bill that would give illegal immigrants free insurance. It's just amazing. No wonder Californians in various cities in that state are rebelling against Jerry Brown and the leftist out of their minds legislature in California, which they, by the way, elected. You know, what you get what you elect. That's what I've been trying to say for years. And people just were enjoying their lives so much, they couldn't interrupt them by being bothered by paying attention to elections. And the natural consequence has been that the wicked crooks, the manipulators, the selfish, the ambitious for the wrong reasons have made their way into the halls of the local state capitals and also into Congress. And could I just stop and say, for those of you who listen to this program, God bless you for getting involved. God bless you for that. And you see the results of that, like in yesterday's primary, where a lot of really fine people were elected. So now we need to wake more people up, don't we? And we will. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.